हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीमद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarana 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 67. The meaning is this: just as with other avatars and the Purusha avatars, so this avatar, your manifestation as Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, appeared in order to relieve the burden of the earth, Bhuvaha, who has great bhakti, and to give happiness of worshipping you constantly. Anujanaya to the devotees. You say that the goal of having forms is to give happiness of bhakti to devotees. Since you are full of bliss, why would you think of their happiness? Right? Because we can see is that who's going to be doubting these personal things, right? It's going to be the impersonalists. So for them, it's not about anybody else's happiness, because they think the idea of happiness, you know, with people and other interactions is all bogus. They think it's all material. So their idea is, why would you care about the devotees? Because even if you are transcendental, since you are bliss, you are Atmarama, why would you care about the other living entities who are conditioned in the material world? In this, because that's illusory, right? The material world's illusion, and so therefore all these relationships are illusion. Why would you care about these relationships, since you are transcendental, right? Because that's their ideas. They're transcendental. They don't care about anybody. They just care about trying to, you know, themselves come to the transcendental platform, right? So they're just projecting their own values, right? Uttara, the Lord who knows everything is without fault. He would have the fault of lack of compassion by ignoring the devotees who depend only on him. Ananya bhavanam. Compassion appears even in Atmaramas. Tatapi dosha parame nai vaharya katanchana guna virudha apyete samaharya samantata. Still, the fault of birth and transformation can never be found in the Supreme Lord, but contrary qualities are found together in the Lord. Right? So, the faults of birth, transformation, these things you don't find in the Lord. He's beyond this. But all the qualities that are there that may be contradictory in the different places, like how would you be Atmarama, self-satisfied, but at the same time be compassionate? Right? Because compassion means that you're impelled. And so then the idea of Atmarama, you're not impelled to it, do anything. You just exist. So that's the whole problem. Right? Thus, this is possible for the Lord who has a variety of qualities. The Shrutis glorify with wonder a portion of this quality spread everywhere in things related to him. This quality attracts everyone from Brahma to the lowest entity. So everything is him. So then, what's the problem? Even you say he's Atmarama, and he would only be dealing with himself. All the living entities, everything, is all part and parcel of him. So why wouldn't he, being an Atmarama, who means they're satisfied in the self, be taking care of the self to be satisfied? Even if you're looking at it from that side, yes.
When they say Atmarama, they address Paramatma?
It means they'd always be like that. They may be addressing Bhagavan, but they'll be approaching him as Paramatma.
And when we say Atmarama, we mean...
Atmarama just means self-satisfied, this transcendental. So you're basically meaning the position of the Lord just it is his eternality. You know, it means being eternality, knowledge, and bliss, the existence of that. So in other words, you have Satchitananda in existence mode. That's Atmarama. And then Satchitananda then applied, then that is Paramatma. But then Satchitananda, where it's about the interaction, the rasa and relationship with the devotees, that's Bhagavan. So it's the same person, it's just the three features. And these features are based on himself, since he has these three qualities. Then that means everything's divided into three. So it always comes back to that. We're conscious because he's conscious. Like that. So let's see. The Lord says, right, and so this quality of compassion is attractive to everybody. Right? Because if there's compassion there, then you have a relationship that brings on, that's what people, living entities, are looking for. They're looking for eternal relationships. Right? The Lord says, those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, those materially satisfied, those who are ignorant, those who intentionally offend those who act for others' welfare, do not respond even to those who love them. What to speak of those who are inimical? Right? Okay, those who are spiritually self-satisfied, they don't act for others. Those who are materially satisfied, they also are not. Those who are ignorant, they don't, just because they don't see. And those who intentionally offend those who act, they also do not respond. Right? Does that make sense? You know, someone's just very happy on his own, then the problem comes is that you may not interact with others around you because you're happy on your own. Right? Hence the tradition of certain personages in the family authoritative line are always busy making everybody miserable so that they have proper relationships. Yes? Yes.
It's interesting that Mayavadis, they think they're in the first category, but actually they're in the last.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because, those who act for others' welfare, they don't know. They don't understand the Lord, the devotees. And so even that, it's not even just those who are doing regular welfare work that they're offensive to. That'll be. But they're in the category, they're offensive to those who do the highest welfare work.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So, yeah. That's the problem. But the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:32-19-20. Right? Because he being the form of bliss, therefore, being absorbed in him will be the most blissful condition. Right? So if he deals in this way, they become much more and more absorbed in him. Yeah? No? The mercy of the all-powerful Lord, whose goal is happiness of the devotee, is the Lord's astonishing excellent nature arising from the play of the bliss of his sarup. Right? So our goal is to please Krishna. Krishna's goal is to bring happiness to the devotees. You understand? So because Krishna's goal is to bring happiness to others, right? Means, so therefore the natural thing within, means he as the energetic in the energy. So the natural thing of the energy means getting from him is to create happiness in the energetic. Does that make sense? So it's not that we're just serving him and he's just sitting back. Because then he'd be in the Atmarama stage. And if he's in the Atmarama stage, what does he need our service for anyway? So, it's that the service increases the taste of relationship. Right? And only increases because of the aspect of service. Therefore, he takes care of the devotees. But, because he knows ultimately what's going on, he arranges it in such a way that it works out the best for everybody. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, and this is the play of the bliss of his sarup. So the bliss in him, he's Satchitananda. So that's his sarup. So therefore the bliss aspect does this. Right? is always absorbed in pleasing the devotees. But the point is how will the devotee be pleased if it's not totally absorbed in the Lord? So that is shown as Anu Kalam Vichati. He eternally accepts birth in the verse already quoted. He who has no birth or activities, no name or form, and no qualities or faults, eternally accepts birth and activities as Brahman Shiva at the time creation and destruction by his energies of Rajas and Tamas by creating and destroying the universe. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.8. One should not think that the Lord has any other goal in doing these actions. The goal of the Lord is also capable. Who is most capable is simply bliss. It is said, Kripa lor asamartasya dukha yaiva kripa luta samartasya tu tasyaiva sukha yaiva kripa luta. For a person who cannot show compassion, a false show of compassion causes him suffering. For a person capable of compassion, showing compassion makes him happy. Right? So that false show for the person who doesn't, it makes them unhappy because he has to go through all that trouble and he really doesn't want to do it. But there's some purpose, he's trying to gain something. So it's just like anything you want to gain, it's work. So, and that work is trouble, it's misery. That's why when you get the results of it, that's when you're happy. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then for Krishna, then that showing that compassion, that's natural for him. So that's where he gains his happiness. So someone who is comfortable, capable of compassion, when they can show that compassion, they're very happy. Right? But someone who doesn't have compassion, when they have to, you know, make a show of it, it makes them unhappy. You know, just like anything that they're trying to gain. They have to work. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that means for the Lord, it's natural. It's inherent in this sarup. So that compassion for the devotees, that's natural. It's not that he has to work at it. It's not that he's Atmarama, so therefore then he has to work at it. Okay, you've done this, I have to reciprocate. You know, as he says, as you surrender, you reciprocate. Because this is the gopi's question, right? Is that, you know, there's different kinds of Atmaramas, as is mentioned here, right? You know, before. But so then what kind of Atmarama is he? You know, because they're taking it as that he's self-satisfied, so he doesn't actually care. But he's pointing out that he, inherently, as a sarup, cares for the devotees. So, yes.
So what form of the Lord actually shows us his position as an Atmaram, as such? Do we know of the form like that?
Well, I mean, anything. It'd be coming through the name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, any of this. Because we can see as how he is Atmarama. But the point is that it's inherent in him, even though he's Atmarama, that aspect of bliss and activities. Right? Because Sat, you know, brings out that aspect of Atmarama. You know? And because of Ananda, then it's about reciprocation. So that means then there's chit, there's activity.
So can we say when he is experiencing bliss with his internal potency within himself, that's the Atmarama feature, when we can really see it?
It would be back from that. That will already be the you know, the Ananda that we're talking about in reciprocation with the devotees, because the point is he's interacting with the internal potency. You know, seeing it or not seeing it.
Right.
So, Atmarama means just his existence, he's self-satisfied. He doesn't require anything for himself. So, the bliss of just his existence then is that Atmarama feature. But, you know, it's just like we're not satisfied. We can't just exist. We have to have this, that, so many things. But he's just self-satisfied in himself. But then he increases that bliss by the reciprocation with the devotees, by the compassion and interaction with the devotees. Does that make sense? So he's going to a higher level. So this Atmarama, that's on the just he exists. He is existence. And so because he is everything, then he is self-satisfied. Right? Because there's the existence of the Ananda principle. Then there's the activity of it. Then there's the experience. Does that make sense? So that means each one has all three. Right? So he exists. There is the principle of, non-action in existence. And there's the happiness of that non-action in existence. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And then there'll be the existence of activities. The performance of activities and the happiness gained by performing an activity properly.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then you're going to have the Ananda, which means the Ananda exists. Does that make sense? And there's the dynamics of the interaction in that, and there's the satisfaction from that. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of which is being emphasized of the three. So then it's in that aspect. Does that make sense? So it's not just clear, just Ananda, just activities, this. Because how can you have activities if they don't exist? How can you have Ananda if they don't exist? You know, what's the point of existence if you're not doing something with it, if it's not producing an effect? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So all three are existing. Yeah. Yes.
Think devotee first with good, some mercy of Sri Krishna, and then it seems to him that he lost it. How he can distinguish? Is it happened because Krishna wants to increase his attachment, or it happened because of his wrong attitude, pride, for example, or aparatha?
Okay. That now, what's the purpose of the universe?
To help us to death.
Yes. So, therefore, what does it matter? Even if you do something wrong, you get a reaction. What's the purpose of that?
We can improve it.
Yes, to bring us closer to Krishna. And improvement means coming closer to Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. So, therefore, it's the same thing. It may have different features, but it's the same thing.
But if you don't improve,
sorry?
You go away from Krishna.
Yes, but then you suffer, and so that doesn't work so good.
But if you don't know what's to improve.
But that's why we associate with devotees. Then we have an idea of what to improve. Does that make sense? You know, so it's not just the improvement of the getting the perfect glaze on your donut or something, you know, like that. Is that? Because why? Because then it's offered to Krishna, for the Vaishnavas. No?
Can it be if, for example, devotee got some mercy, means that his responsibility will be increased?
His responsibility. The point is mercy can be so many different aspects. Point is if they have an ability where it's natural to serve Krishna through having responsibility, then they'll do that. But it may be that it goes the other way. Like Maharaj Yudhishthira, right? They're living out in the forest, they're just, you know, then they come back into the city, or they come into the city, and then being in the city, then, you know, the problem's there, then they get kind of a position, then they lose that in Varanavata, then they come back, you know, then they have their own place, then they lose that, so, you know what I'm saying? But the whole time, it's all about just being absorbed in the Lord. Does that make sense? See, as we generally tend to look at all this whole process from the platform of religion. So religion means you do a proper activity, you get a proper result, a bad activity, you get a bad result. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say the religion of a jug is that it holds liquid, right? So if I pour the liquid properly into the jug, then I'm following that proper religious aspect, right? If I'm pouring in such a way that half of it goes in the jug, half of it goes on the counter, right? Then I'm not following the actual religious principle, right? Does that make sense? You know, of the jug, of the proper how the technique of pouring, you know, all these different things, and so therefore I get a bad result, right? I only have half the amount of juice that I was expected, right? Does that make sense? You know, unless I'm completely happy with the dog jumping up on the counter and licking up what's left there. If that was my plan, then hey, you did a great job. But if that was not the plan, then it's a problem. Does that make sense? Right. Because there's a good chance the cat is not going to jump up there and lick up what's on the counter. Like that. Does that make sense? So, the point is we're looking at from the religious point of view, that I perform the activity, I get a good result. And the result means it's in the form of something tangible that I can see. Right? And so, therefore, if things go wrong, then I take it that religion is wrong here. And so I may take it that the actual problem is not getting the result. Does that make sense? Like you said, you had a position, you lose the position. So the problem is losing the position. You know, or I had some facility, lose that. You understand? But the point is that why do we have that facility? It's to serve Krishna. And so we can serve Krishna whether we have that facility or not. So it doesn't change our relationship with Krishna and our dedication to Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's not dependent upon religion. Bhakti is independent of religion. Does that make sense? That's why we're not allowed in Singapore. No, is it Singapore?
Yeah,
Singapore. It's because of this point. They don't understand Sarvadharma Parityaja. They think we're throwing out religion, and so we're irreligious. So why do we want irreligious people in their country? That's another thing, but that they don't talk about it. You know, it's just like everybody's doing nonsense. But if you don't talk about it, it's cool. But if you talk about it, that breaks the etiquette, and so therefore, you know. Does that make sense? So the point is that if we have the facility, then we remember Krishna and use it in his service. We don't have the facility, we remember Krishna and use whatever we have now in Krishna's service. So the principle of our relationship with Krishna does not change.
If you lost concentration on Krishna.
Yeah, but the point is concentration on Krishna dependent upon you having good facilities or not? Right? If it was, wouldn't all the billionaires on the planet be the first ones to be devotees? In fact, just the trillionaires, you just look at them and they'd surrender. You know? Just they're just so rich, they're just, you know, they were just waiting for that moment of that, you know, I say Lobha Matra Sadhu Sangha like that, and then they'd just be pure devotees, right? You know, the billionaires, you know, it takes a little bit, you know, I have to have a conversation, and then they surrender. You know, millionaires, they put in a little more work. You know, and our local sanitation engineer, and that may take lifetimes, yeah. Does that make sense? You know, because it's all based on money, right? Yes? Bhakti is based on money? No. So, that's the whole point, is that it's a matter of how we look at it, because we're looking at it from the religious side. Oh, this is good, this is bad, and that it's I'm remembering Krishna or not remembering Krishna. That's what's good and bad. It's not whether I have facilities or not. Because you see, Krishna with the Pandavas, sometimes they have, sometimes they don't.
Bhakti is not based on money, but can money be based on bhakti?
Is money based on bhakti? Money is always based on bhakti.
Then
you can't have money without bhakti.
Then billionaires.
Sorry.
Coming back to that example.
Yeah, it means you don't. It means through bhakti you can gain money, but it doesn't mean you can't lose that money. Just because you got it from bhakti doesn't mean it's not lost. Mm. The bhakti is not lost. See, otherwise, how do you have facility? How do you have variety? You understand?
Yeah,
so what is fixed, right? When we're talking about on the transcendental platform, what is fixed? A relationship with Krishna. Does it say that the particular manifestation of the various arrangements and facilities is fixed? No. Right? You know, yeah. So that's the whole thing, is therefore then you have the spiritual variety. And so what remains, no matter what, it's like Mother Jashoda's in her house, everything's going nicely, she has love for Krishna. What about when Krishna and the pastime with Kaliya? She still has love for Krishna. You understand? So that's what's fixed, is that attraction to Krishna. So that's why it's said here that he, to improve attraction. Okay, but the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. Quite going to say is a poor man who's gained something, because he'll take it very seriously. The rich man, you know, he's running one of his 10 businesses and there's a loss there. He just knows that he just has to follow the standard, you know, how you say, principles, and then he'll make money again. So for him, it's not a big deal. You know, so Krishna's trying to improve our affection for him. So that's the whole point, because then if his goal is pleasing the devotees, how much volume is there? Right? Only a lot?
A lot. More than a lot.
Okay. More than a lot. You say, the supreme absolute truth means more than a lot. Everybody else is a lot. He's more than a lot. He's beyond a lot. Even beyond Camelot. Which is supposed to be the position of bliss. Right? So, yeah. It also didn't work out for Lot, right?
Yeah.
No.
Nothing with Lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fine. His name's Lot, but he didn't get
much.
Any at all, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that's what they're saying. So when you say a lot, you're actually saying a lot. Mm-hmm. Not Lot. Right? So that's my lot, means it's unfortunate. So we say it's a lot, means it's not unfortunate.
It's a double negation.
Yes. You negate the negative. Yeah, it's like a Lakshmi. Yeah. Okay, does that make sense? So, in other words, when we look at it from the religious aspect, which is natural, but you have to still see it in connection with the primary, that Krishna is not going there, so then if we're looking at it, that it's a bad thing, why is it a bad thing? That means I'm not that Krishna conscious, that's why it's been taken away. Not that I did the activity and I get the good result, or I didn't do the activity properly, that's why I didn't get the good result. It's all based on bhakti. So you have the proper devotion, you may get what you don't even expect. And you may have not devotion, even though you've done things very expertly, it doesn't work out. Right? Have you ever had in cooking? You cooked everything perfectly. Because, you know, you've practiced, you know when the technique is right. You know, everything worked perfectly. You offer it to the deities, right? Then afterwards, when you taste, then there's no taste. And another time, you were cooking for the deities and you know something went wrong and things went wrong, you're trying to fix and you're really in anxiety if it'll be alright, and you, after the offering, you taste it, it's very wonderful. So what's actually the point there? Is Krishna accepting it or not? It's not the technique. So we try to do our best technique for Krishna because we want a good result for Krishna. Because we're expressing our bhakti through the senses, which means through, therefore, action and therefore through result. That whole line of then engaging the senses and then getting a result and then offering that to Krishna, or just working for Krishna. That's then the expression of devotion, right? But it's not technically about the mechanical. But we want to avoid laziness because we might think, oh, it's not about the mechanical, therefore it doesn't matter. See, that's where the sahajiyas come in. Right, the mode of ignorance comes in like that, or passion. I'm not getting that, so then why I should do it? Or it doesn't matter, so then, but then how else are you going to express? You understand? So the point is they may all seem contradictory, but these are all resolved in the Lord because it's all connected to the Lord. So that something goes wrong, then you immediately look at your devotion, or you can also look at the technique. You understand? But the point is to increase devotion. So it doesn't matter if how it's gone, because of the conscious, you may be doing everything right, but the consciousness is wrong, or you did something wrong, therefore. The point is you do something wrong, generally the consciousness is not right. But you can do the mechanics or the technique correct, and still the consciousness not be right. Does that make sense? You know, otherwise, if it was on technique, then all your corporate middle managers would also be pure devotees. Right? They're very expert. They do everything very first class. You know? Does that make sense? But they're in the category of Naradamas. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, speaking to corporate middle management as corporate middle management, how do you preach to a Naradama? That's why it doesn't go so well.
You don't preach.
Yeah, you don't. So, therefore, you have to deal with them as individuals and that they have an opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness, and so then you present it so they appreciate it. Just the idea that they're professionals, therefore they have more of an opportunity for Krishna consciousness. No, they're the worst of the four. Muda is better. He's just in ignorance. He's just like an animal. You know, and animals are, you know, cute and cuddly, you know, but Naradamas are, that's why they said the lowest of men. They're the worst. Because they have the brains to understand. It means the Muda doesn't have the brains to understand. The Naradama has the brains to understand, and they don't use it. So if you don't have anything, and therefore you don't use it, that's bad. It's unfortunate. But if you have and you don't use it, that's worse. Does that make sense? Let's say the Mudha, he doesn't have money, and he doesn't give in charity. Okay, so it's wrong. Why doesn't he have money? Why is he so silly? He doesn't have money. Why is he so ignorant? He doesn't know about the charity. But he's not. So it's bad. But it's money. Then the Naradama has the money and won't give in charity. That's worse. The Mayaya Pratigyana, he has a philosophy: we shouldn't give in charity.
He doesn't have money anyway.
Therefore, his philosophy, right? Sour grapes. And then the Asura, then, you know, he just takes everybody else's money. So he doesn't give in charity. You understand? So, yeah.
If in dangerous, devotee feels that his focus on Krishna is better than when dangerous will go away.
Then dangers will go away.
Yes,
no, being absorbed in Krishna will be there. That's what you're trying to attain. It's not that you're trying to get rid of the dangers. You're trying to be absorbed in Krishna. And then it's up to Krishna how it works. It's just like in any work. We can do our effort, but the result is up to the Lord. It's not up to us. Because we don't know what else is there. We see, I did this work, therefore I should get this result. But we don't know what's there in the past. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the whole thing, is that we may put in the effort to do something, but we don't know our mentality from the past connected with that. So that's why then Krishna knows. Let's say getting money, then one becomes proud and goes away from devotional service, and we've done that another lifetime. So then why will Krishna give us money now? He'll give just how much you can stay Krishna conscious. Right? And so the more Krishna conscious you are, that means it doesn't mean the more money you can use. But at the same time, is that then the best situation for you? Because then by having more money, then you involve yourself in so many things, you may or may not be able to be more Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? You may use it in that way, or you may, you know, get distracted. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So then Krishna knows what will be best for you being Krishna conscious. That's the point. But the thing is all good facility comes from bhakti. So if you're supposed to have, then you will. And if you're not, you won't. So so that's why the point of, in the Shastras it says, perform your duty, because it should be done. Because then in knowledge, you can perform like that. Otherwise, then the tendency is only from passion that we work. We only work because of passion. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful like that.
Means which situation we have now is the best for our bhakti, no?
It is, considering our mentality now. Right? We improve the mentality, then that may change or not. The point is that if you're Krishna conscious, you're not disturbed by the environment around you. It's just a matter of, for your service, what you'll use and that. So if you have more facility, you use that. If you don't, you don't. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're dealing with. Now we may see, I have more attachment, therefore I'm more comfortable to have that facility. That's why then in your duties, you work for that facility. Does that make sense? You know, it's like let's say, the position of the grihasthas, they need more facility, they want more facility. There's more desire, so that's why they work for it. But let's say like a vanaprastha, they don't have that desire. So they just maintain. Does that make sense? So, if you see your mentality, you need to, but then you do through the standard process. You do through your process of what work you're supposed to do. That makes sense? Because that's your duty. That's the only way you'll gain something. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say we go up to a vending machine. You know a vending machine? You know those funny boxes with glass in the front and there's things inside to eat or something, and then you put a coin in and push a button and... Mm-hmm. Is the name for it Russian?
No. Because we never had it. It's an American thing.
Okay.
Yes. Now they have it, but there's no name for that.
There isn't.
Huh? Automat. Yeah, just general name.
What that means?
Automatic machine.
Oh, automatic machine. Yeah, that's it. Automatic. How you say? Miniature. How you say? Store without a salesperson.
Perfection. Perfection.
That's why they run it, right? You know? Okay. Where were we?
The machine.
Yes, okay. So, now, you go up to the machine. And so, what are you supposed to do? Right? You put the coin in there and push the button of the item that you want. Right? And then you wait for the machine to give it to you. And hopefully, out of its mercy, it does. Right? So, now if you go there and you're more attached, does it make the machine work better? Or what if you're totally unattached, you just couldn't care less? Will that make the machine work better? So therefore, just doing the duty in connection between the relationship between you and the machine and the mechanics of how that works, that's what has to be there. You know? So we're with the idea, unless I'm totally attached, it won't work. But that has nothing to do with it. Does that make sense? Okay. Like that. So it's due to passion we think that that's how it's working, because, and then we think I'm the doer, therefore what I get is mine. But it's actually no. I perform the mechanics of this operation, and therefore I got the results. You know, by that operation, it produced those results. Right? Now, if we're working in the mode of goodness, that may be our quota if we performed our duty. Right, so that's why it says better to do your duty than another, because you're only supposed to work with your quota. You do someone else's job, you get their quota, not yours. You know, you do your job, you get your quota. Right? So it's not yours because you're not in control of the energies of the Lord. You're not in control of that knowledge. You're not in control of the transformations of these energies. Right? And so that means we're not in control of the results. But we claim that we are, so that's the mode of passion and ignorance. While goodness means you know that you're not, but because here you perform your duties, you get your results.
We should be satisfied of the material things, which facilities which Krishna gives us. But should we be satisfied of level of Krishna consciousness which we have?
Yes, also? Means it's about the means. Krishna consciousness can always be improved. Facility is that it's just like this. Let us say you have, let's say, does this work? A dozen long stem red roses.
Well,
doesn't work. Too much trouble. Order them online. Okay, now that is a medium for expression of affection. Right? So, that could be done just because somebody wants to get something done, so they give. Some it could be given because, you know, it's what you're supposed to do and, you know, it has its natural, you know, reciprocation. Someone else might have some affection. Some might have so much affection. But do the roses change? Right? Means that's the thing. It's an unknown secret of the florists. Is that they actually know what's the mentality of the person when they hand them the flowers, right? Because when they hand them the flowers, and if it's simply a external material kind of motive without any consideration of the person, it's simply self-centered. When they hand them the roses, a lot of the petals tend to fall off the roses, just right on the spot as soon as they get it, right? And then the problem comes is by the time they get there, they've all fallen off. And so unless you're giving it to, what's her name? Mrs. Adams, then, you know, you'd have a problem. Right? No?
Adams family?
Yeah, because she'd always cut the roses off and just leave the thorny sticks, right? So unless you're giving it to her, then it's a problem. So, you know. Right? But if someone actually has affection, then you see they stay nice, and if they really have affection, this really means something, then you see the flowers get even better. You know, they start, like glittering and stuff like that.
Double the amount.
Yes, double the amount, or they turn into marzipan. You can eat them or something. you understand? But it's the same flower. So that's the point, is that the gross materialist is doing his work, right? Someone in the mode of goodness is doing the same work. Someone who is on the platform of karma yoga is doing that work. Someone on the platform of jnana yoga is doing that work. And someone on the platform of pure bhakti is doing that work. But the point is the mechanics of the work is exactly the same, and the external result that you can get from that work is exactly the same. That doesn't change. So it's a medium for whatever is the mentality that you're looking for. Does that make sense? Yeah? So, therefore, that's where we get the balance, because otherwise you'll say there's a contradiction. It doesn't matter why we're doing it, but that's from passion. It means the point is you have to do. We're such cheat and anon. You have to do activities. You have to have knowledge activities, and they bring bliss. What? So therefore, we perform our duties the best we can because we want to please Krishna. Then, depending on our mentality, it's good or not, or this or that, we may be or not, pleasing Krishna. But the overall idea of doing it to please Krishna, that's pleasing to Krishna. But it just means we can improve the quality of that. And so therefore, it might result in getting more facility or less facility. Does that make sense? So that's why we can't be attached to what's there. It's what's there we use. And when it's not there, we don't. It's just like, let's say, you have some potatoes in the kitchen. When they're in the kitchen, you use potatoes. When they're not in the kitchen, you don't use potatoes. Right. So you can't get attached to those particular potatoes because they go in the pan, they go in the offering, they go into people eat them. They disappear. Right. Does that make sense?
In Russia, devotees made survey, and they figured out by the 6th year of practice in Krishna consciousness, most everybody lives. Like if you practice more than 6 years, it's a rare species action. And then one of the points is that, like you explained, because religion gives stability, but bhakti, by that time, devotees figure out. It's highly unpredictable. So if we come in for dharma, artha, kama, moksha, not necessarily we're getting it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in the Bhagavatam we read so many examples of that. You know, Pandavas and Dhruva Maharaj and Parikit Maharaj and Prahladma. You know, it's like you can't really predict bhakti, but religion, it is predictable. It's very stable kind of thing.
But then you also have to have the piety for it to be running in that stability now. Because if I'm stable in performance of dharma, then in the future those results will come.
Right.
You know, because there's the idea that I've done something wrong, so if I do something good, it counters it. No, it doesn't.
No.
You do something good, that gives you a good result in the future. So it's just a matter, if I keep doing good work now, I'll stop the bad, so the bad will stop at some point. The prarabdha karma will stop. Then I'll just be getting the prarabdha karma of good.
Yeah.
So the point is, it still it goes by your karma anyway. You know, so you're not going to get more. But and the point is, the sense everything is a reflection of bhakti. Then you're only getting all these things because of the element of bhakti. So if you give up bhakti for these other things, then what have you actually gained? So in other words, there's a need that if it's 6 years, so in 6 years, how far should they have studied in the scriptures?
Right. Well, on a basic level.
Yes, but is that going on? So if they're figuring out that okay, religion gives the things and bhakti doesn't necessarily always give by that aspect, then therefore why am I doing this? You know, I want the material facilities. But that means is they've only seen one side of it. What about the other side is karma doesn't work without bhakti. So bhakti's the origin and bhakti's independent. You know. And the whole point is this, now in religion you have to, there's sacrifice to get the result, no?
Yeah.
So now if the result is just some money or that, then we can see people around us who are putting in that sacrifice and getting money. Right? Or fame or power or anything. They put in that sacrifice to get it. And these are all around us, these are all available, and this is and we were not satisfied with that. That's why we came to Krishna consciousness. So now what's being offered is eternal relationship with Krishna. You know, on the platform of prema. That's just being offered. So won't there be some sacrifice? So therefore, the actual goal that's there, that those processes, the nature of bhakti, the nature of Krishna, the nature of the soul, these aren't being understood. In other words, the philosophy is not being discussed very much. And there may be less association with pure devotees. So in other words, another one, if we want to take this is just playing the devil's advocate here. If you want to take this survey even further, all those devotees who leave after 6 years, are those the ones that joined because of the, you know, whatever it is, the 3000 or the Ayurvedic or the Vastu thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then that means it's good to get people in the door, but if you think that that's all you're going to do, then you've missed the whole point. You don't understand pure bhakti. So the point is that, yes, it might attract people to Krishna, but you've attracted them materially to Krishna. But, as Narad Muni says, it's still connected to Krishna. It's glorious. But, as pointed out in the Gita, unless they get beyond the Artha, Artarthi, and Jigyasu, to the Jnani, that they're actually grateful to God for the opportunity to know Him and render service to Him, unless they get to there, they won't move to the Madhyama platform. So that's why they fall away. So, in other words, this idea is that just this so-called quote-unquote preaching where you just get people to join and that's all you have to do, then yes, okay, that is the aspect of Jiva Doya. But what about Vaishnav Seva? What about Nama Ruchi? These aren't even being discussed. So they're not moving forward because they're not getting association of pure devotees, because the devotees are just talking about, you know, some opera vidya. And that's it. And it's not even really in connection with the Lord. It's just the technicalities of how Ayurveda or Vastu or business or something works. But it's not actually the philosophy of how Krishna being everything, how that connects to Krishna for his pleasure, you know, without karma and jnana. So pure devotion, as defined by Rupa Goswami, is not being discussed. That's what's not being preached. You might catch their attention through these, but unless the advanced stages you bring them to pure bhakti, then yes, you have established them and moved them forward a little bit this lifetime. But Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, you know, as given to us, you know, by Srila Rupa Goswami, by the method of Jiva Goswami, you can get someone to the point they can go back to Godhead this life. So if you're not moving forward in that, then there's something wrong in the understanding, in the practice. So that's the whole point. That's why we always talk, you know, not favorably towards this soft preaching. Because the point is they use the soft preaching, they don't take it further. Because unless you come to the point of understanding sacrifice and surrender to Krishna, which will be considered hard, then why would you surrender? Why would you even know that it's there? So in other words, you might present to the public something more of a soft side, but with the devotees, then it's going to be... Because with the devotees also, then you have the dadati prati grinati guhyamaki dipichati bhunkte bojayate. You know, so something common that you can eat. You know, connected to Krishna. So that has to be there. So that's where the weakness is. Because if you go back in time, when before this kind of preaching, was that the percentage?
Nobody did the survey.
No, but the point is who's doing the preaching now? The ones that didn't come by that, the ones that came by the previous preaching that you say you can't preach that way. They're still here. By using this so-called modern preaching technique, where are these people? And as soon as you get, you know, you try to bring out pure devotion, they lose interest. Because otherwise, if it's for material gain, there's other people that are much better at it than us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we have to be very, very careful. Is that, you know, whatever technique you use, just like I was mentioning, one devotee, they run a kind of a yoga studio center and all these kind of things. And they do kirtans and all that. So they have their open programs. And they talk all the new age yoga stuff. But within 2 hours, they have them chanting Hare Krishna. Kirtan. Means they just do a big kirtan for, you know, half hour, 45 minutes. Get everybody chanting. So by the end, they understand it's the Hare Krishna, it's this and that. He starts off with all the touchy-feely stuff like that, but he ends with just straightforward Krishna consciousness. And so those people, then you see they're generally steady and solid devotees. Because he brings them to that point. Albeit still yogis. But you can talk pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yes.
Do you think that a soft preaching and then gradually bringing it to the topic of pure devotion is a nice way of...
It's a way for those who don't necessarily have that faith in that pure devotion includes everything else. So someone who has weaker faith, then it will be a good system for them. Because they're preaching in an area that is of value to them, right? Doing yoga preaching means that person values yoga. Someone who totally doesn't like yoga or anything like that, or never did as a karmi, or wouldn't hang out with people like that, I guarantee they're not the ones preaching in the yoga circuit. You know what I'm saying? So people are engaging their conditioning, so which is fine. That's the process. That's the process of karma yoga. So, but the point is that what's the philosophy of it? When you say soft preaching, what soft is means they don't present the religion of Krishna consciousness, right? But unfortunately, in doing that, since they can't tell the difference between the religion and philosophy, they don't present the philosophy either. So you can do soft preaching by presenting direct Vedanta philosophy, just using language that makes sense to the person that you're dealing with. So technically, that's just called preaching. So this idea of soft preaching is just a mundane concept that's come up as a reaction to quote-unquote hard preaching. So in other words, both of them are niyamagraha preaching. One is just preaching on the rules, because the rules are everything. If you're not doing this, then you can't be a devotee. You know, like let's say someone's pushing the thing of being a vegetarian. But it's actually supposed to be pushing chanting. Even if they're a meat eater, if they start chanting, they'll give up the meat eating. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that's the whole point, is that one is preaching the religion but not the philosophy. Or the, you know, and the other one then is throwing, because they don't understand the religion, they throw that out and then they have nothing. Because the other thing, how do you express philosophy unless it's through a context that people can relate to? And so therefore, it has to be in context of action and reaction. And so it has to be, that's a religion. But you have to find what is their take on religion and what is valuable to them and talk in that concept. Because for us, everything being Krishna, that means all the religious aspects are all Krishna. So even the karma he's doing, the gross material is still, he's following the religion of, let's say, money or sense gratification or power or beauty. It's still Krishna's. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So therefore, that's why Prabhupada could preach to anybody, anywhere, anytime. That's because he just preaches the philosophy to the individual soul. So soft preaching is actually impersonal, because it's not about the individual. It's about the yogis or the new agers, or it's not about the individual. They'll talk like it is, but it's not. You know? And then the hard preaching, they're dealing with an individual, but they don't deal like they're dealing with an individual. They deal in an impersonal way, but it's about the individual.
So rather than hard or soft preaching, we should just be preaching.
We should just be preaching. That's the point. It's just like duality. How much are we into duality? Right? No. So then why is it hard or soft? That's right. Oh, that's conservative. So if we're liberal, then it's good. It's the same nonsense. Mm. No. We have our path. It's the razor's edge. You know?
And it's to encourage chanting.
It means the point is this: you have to understand who you are. You're not the body or the soul. There's something higher and all that. Therefore, this chanting is the process. They don't understand they're not the body. Then what's the whole point? Or if they can't, but they're willing to chant. You know, it's just like preaching in Brahmananda Prabhu and preaching in Africa. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of philosophy they could get into. One, you don't really speak the language, you know, and that. But they did kirtan. And they distributed prasad, everybody would be there. Not one person wouldn't be there. They show up out in some village, you know, start cooking some, you know, some cornmeal, and start up a kirtan. They'll dance for hours, literally. And then take prasad, and they're good. You know what I'm saying? But for people who won't just naturally, they're not pious enough to take up the chanting or prasad, then therefore you have to convince them. Because generally those people think they're smart, so therefore you present it in a more, you know, intellectual way. You know, so-called intellectuals. Yes?
Actually what I observed is when you're trying to do soft preaching, you lose two main categories of people who are actually leaders. One is the real intelligent. They find out there's something wrong here. He's trying to beat around the bush.
Uh-huh.
And then there are other category who are actually very practical oriented.
Yes.
What you say is not practical.
Yes.
And
yes,
these two people actually are the leaders of the group. And you don't have them, then
you don't really have the group.
You don't have a group because they are the one who always lead a group.
Yeah. No, that's the whole point. And then if we do see, okay, so now let's swing the other way. Okay, so these guys are important and all that, and they're the intelligent ones, they're the professional ones. So therefore, now we have to deal with them and talk, you know, professional jargon, do the whole professional thing and present ourselves as if we're really professional and do this whole professional vibe. They're not going to like that either. Right? So then you'll only attract the so-called professional. So in either way, you're going to lose these people. So it's just the straight Vedanta philosophy, these people will accept it. No problems at all. They may have a lot of doubts, a lot of questions, but the answers that we get, they will make sense. Right? So one person, you know, one or two doubts and then they're good. These guys might have 10 doubts. Because they think. So they see doubts in so many areas. They've seen so many religious things, they don't actually understand the meaning of religion. Right? And so then all these things, that then once you clear that, then they're very happy. And then you have to follow up. So that's the whole thing. It's this Prabhupada, if you look at it, like we were saying, the things that we're discussing here, this level of technicality, if you look at Prabhupada's books, these books that we have, the Gita and these, you know, small books like that, they're all working on this level. So the books are out there distributing, they're working on this level. And Prabhupada would talk, even he's talking in 66, 60, so he's talking on this level. But he's just making it very practical and straightforward for who he's talking to. So it works. So this idea that, oh, we can't talk like that because we don't understand the philosophy of what we're talking about. It's an example, but it's an example of the philosophy. So we have to understand what that means. So that's fine. It means we understand what we understand, and that's enough in the beginning. But the point is by 6 years, you should have learned some philosophy. Why not? You know, so if not, then that means there's something wrong. We'll talk more about management, you know, than we will about our philosophy. And so, yes, those people that heard from Prabhupada and in those days, that they're situated nice. But it's not working out for the new people that they're presenting to and thinking that they've improved on the process. Not at all. Otherwise, why is the, you know, statistics not showing them?
And also because you don't have the full-fledged program. Generally, what we see is after a year or two, a person figure out his own way where he can contribute.
Yes.
And then you continue for many years.
Yes.
But if you cannot find anything, if you just have a program...
If you only have yoga or Ayurveda, then what are they going to do? You know, so we're going to have everybody's an Ayurvedic doctor or something like that? Or, you know? So that's the whole point, is that unless we accept Varnashram, how do you engage everybody? So before Varnashram was accepted, it may not have been run very nicely, but everybody's engaged according to their nature. And if you say, well, I wasn't engaged according to my nature, so that's the fault. So then engage according to nature, not throw out Varnashram. You know, it's like there's a fire in the barn, so everything red then is fire. This is that, you know, the example is given of a cow, not of a person. And what's the other one? You go to the holy place, don't associate with the devotees to hear about Krishna consciousness. Again, cow or ass. So the point is, like you say, intelligent people want answers. Present it nicely, have a right attitude, don't be proud. You know, all the things Lord Chaitanya says. Trinada Pisa Nietzsche, not like this. And then present. So, yes.
Sister, is it after some times in all religions like Christianity, Islam and Buddhism, when this religion became more social adapted, then they spread more widely, but the consciousness decreased.
Yes. And, hence the third one didn't spread. I said, hence the third group doesn't spread, and then they maintain their natural low level of consciousness. It doesn't get worse.
Srila Prabhupada said in 16 that we have time to now it's a time for avoiding the need.
Yes.
It seems that if that soft preaching will be opposite process when we put water in a milk.
Yeah. Though soft is putting water, then you have to boil it. Because the point is there's only a process of putting water. There's not a process of boiling it down. That's what I'm saying. For those who do soft preaching, they don't have a system of now teaching directly. They just don't have. They only know how to go out and go into a yoga studio and talk. Now, when those people want to get serious about Krishna consciousness, many don't know what to do with them. Right? Some know how to take them all the way through, and they're the most successful. Does that make sense? But if you only know how to do that, then what do you do? That's the fine is that you're doing, but then have some advanced course. It means you can't have. They do have advanced courses.
Yeah, but you're a teacher.
No, but I'm saying advanced on the level of the philosophy and teachings and all those things like that you would get directly into chanting and things like that. It's just like this. Have we ever heard of in Buddhism, or let's say some of that, I can't remember what it is, if it's Tibetan and that you know, you have their general thing, how it's all, you know, emptiness and mu and all that. And so then you do have that aspect where they have a branch where this level of the secret teaching is there is the ultimate blue Buddha that's beyond the material. Like that. But that will only be taught to those who are very advanced monks. You know what I'm saying? So there is a principle even on these materially inclined religious processes that you do have advanced levels. Like Kabbalah, or, you know, I'm sure that if somebody must be spending time down there in the Vatican library reading things, you know, but the lay, you know, Christian can't go in there. You know, only, you know, probably cardinals or something, but, you know, they may be able to read things, you know, or, you know, what else does the Pope read all day, you know, so. You know, so this, the thing is that there's always this, so why can't there be even in this is that, yes, the beginning thing is just what they're presenting like that, but then they go to more advanced where they get into the chanting that, then they start learning the whole process, they learn it in connection with the Supreme, because it's so easy. That's why it's used, but it's being used from a modern technique instead of from our technique. Yoga's our thing, not the West. But they're only dealing with it because it's a Western thing. The Westerners are into yoga, therefore we're dealing with it. And we're dealing it as New Age. No, you can deal with it as straight yoga. Right? Does that make sense? So you read how Prabhupada introduces these things. Like I was seeing how Prabhupada was talking about everything of the elements and how each element does something. But when he went up through it, and he mentioned eight elements, but he only explained up to intelligence. Because that's all people know. Then, going on from there, then he starts going about, you know, what's keeping us between this intelligence of this spiritual and the material. And that's false identity. And that's the bridge between the two. It means if you have false identity, you're material. You have spiritual identity. You're spiritual. Then he introduces it. He didn't even put it in right in immediately. You know, so he first gave a logical presentation, and as soon as the logical presentation is made, now he talks like that. Now it's introduced. So once he points out God's a person, now he always talks about him as a person. You know, but he'll start off in the Supreme. You see, Bhaktivedanta Thakur does that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. He starts off with just the Supreme, then he gets into God, and then the Lord, and then he points out the end, that wherever he says Supreme, that meant the Lord. So that one has to go up through the process. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then they'll just be what they are, and they'll catch that point of the material aspect, and that's all. And they won't be able to go higher. Does that make sense? So that's why you'll get those who are, let's say you have the priests and you have the theologians. Does that make sense? So the priests know the rituals. You know, dealing with the community, people, and things like that. The theologians actually know the philosophy, you know, whatever is there. So for us, it's easier to talk to theologians than the priests, because priests just see my ritual is this, your ritual is that, it's so different. Theologians don't see so much difference. Does that make sense? So it's easier. Because you're dealing on the philosophy, which the religion is based on. So therefore, if that's the principle you're working on, and then you're expressing it through here, that makes sense. And it's just like you're supposed to respect God. Okay? So whether you're offering a prayer to God, whether you're bowing down to God, whether you're offering an artik to God, chanting mantras for God, it's still this point of surrender to God. You know, being absorbed in name, form, qualities, pastimes, or something. Right? So therefore, the different religions, then they have their processes, how they're supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? So one is bowing down, you know, in either a direction or to a wall. You know, another one is in respecting the scripture itself as the main, you know, where the place of respect is. The other one is then looking at it that, you know, God is everything. So therefore, again, back to the wall, like that. Like that. Does that make sense? And then you have others where, you know, how you say they're not about, they're not into walls and the, you know, the bricks in the walls and all that. So it's just you have all these different approaches. But the principle is the same as that being absorbed in the Supreme. You understand? So a theologian can catch that more. Priests may or may not, depending upon their particular individual realization. They'll just look at it from the ritualistic. Does that make sense? You know, and that way then they fight amongst each other. So everybody has their groups. You know what I'm saying? You know, the Protestants and the Catholics, or the Sunnis and the Shiites, or the, how you say, the Orthodox and the not as Orthodox, you know. Do the Orthodox have a problem with the Hasids? Yeah, it's just everybody has problem with everybody because they're looking. Huh?
Everybody has problems with Muslims.
That's another thing. But I'm saying with the, yeah, and then you know, with one branch and another, you know, how well does the Catholics and the Orthodox get along? You know, East Orthodox, or then how do they get along with the Oriental?
Protestant.
You know, even amongst themselves, the Protestants amongst each other, they don't like each other. You know, so that's the whole thing, because they're simply looking at the secondary form. They're not looking at the primary as surrender to God. So that's why when we preach, it's about us, who we are, who's the Supreme, what's this material energy, and what's our relationship. That's preaching. That's sambandhagyan. And then you show that process of bhakti and the ultimate goal of prema. But that it's going to be some yoga, and because it's yoga, therefore, then it's all right. So then, yeah, great, nice. When are you going to introduce about the Supreme? If you haven't done that right in the beginning, then where's the relationship? You know what I'm saying? Like I noticed, I go to these big music guys because I was trying to learn certain things. Because they'll just teach the technique, but I'm trying to figure out the whole concept behind it. So I'll talk and ask questions. And for them, very few people talk on that. So for them, it's nice. So they like to talk. So you can sit and talk an hour for them like that. But the amount I can learn from them, you can teach me in about, you know, 1 minute. You know, literally. Then the problem would come up is then with time, as I'm learning and now they could teach more, they don't, because the relationship is based on talking. So they just talk and all that, and sometimes they get around to the lesson. It's a problem. You know, or it's a problem and you don't have much time. You just only have, you know, that 20 minutes or whatever it is, but then they want to talk for the hour because that's what relationship is you talk for an hour. So if all you talk about is some yoga and this and that, but not about the philosophy, then after 6 weeks, that's your relationship. They don't want to hear about philosophy. They want to hear about philosophy. They would have gone and heard from a philosopher. They like you because you just talk yoga. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. If you can't do, then... Does that make sense?
Can we sing that...
I think we have to stop. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.